Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening and welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd and going to have a very exciting show this evening. Red, are you on with me yet?
Can you hear me?
We hear you, Mr. Red Beckman.
Well, then I'm not muted, am I?
No, you are not. Hey, Red, I don't know how you and I are able to talk tonight. We got such great guests tonight. You and I are probably just going to have to sit back and listen.
Well, I hope that's the way it works out. We get to talk every week, and it's kind of nice to have a week off, probably.
Would you mind opening us with a prayer, please?
I can do that. Heavenly Father, we come to you thankful that you are there and that you hear our petitions. When we ask for help, and we need help tonight as to how this program should progress, give us the words that you would have our audience to hear tonight, that they would be blessed by what is said and given a sense of direction. We have a world out here that doesn't have too much of a sense of direction. There's a lot of confusion. And we just pray that you would help us to help people to see the truth, help them to have a real hunger for truth. We just know that truth has been a commodity that has not been all that plentiful for too many years, and now it's coming back, and I like to say that we've had a tremendous influx of truth, an explosion of truth, if you please, in just the last few months and the last couple of years. It's just been happening very quick, and we just thank you for it, because you are the God that demands truth, and you operate with truth. And we just pray that you would give us the inspiration tonight that we need, and we'll give you the praise for everything. In Christ's name, amen.
Well, we could have titled tonight's show, and amen to that, we could have titled tonight's show The Truth Seekers, because everybody that's going to be on tonight are just that. These are people who are on a quest for truth and bringing out truth and educating the people and helping them wake up to what's really going on in this federation. Let's see. I'm not sure who all we've got. We might just start out giving them live mics and see who's in what situation. I know that area code 512, that should be Michael. Michael, are you with us yet?
I'm right here.
Good deal. Tom, do you have a live mic yet?
I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we do. There you are.
All right.
Boy, Tom, I guess this is Tom DeWeese, the founder of the American Policy Center. Tom, you know, I've wanted to get you on Walls in Our Minds for a long time. We've certainly mentioned your name and your work here many, many times on Walls in Our Minds, but it is certainly a pleasure to have you here with us tonight, and I hope this is just the beginning of maybe a number of times we can have you on, because there's an awful lot to talk about. Tonight we want to get into the attack on the private property rights, but to start the show off, Tom, I want you just to give us a little background for our listeners. Some of our listeners are probably quite familiar with you, but some are not. So give us a little background on you, Tom, and on the American Policy Center and kind of what you're trying to accomplish right now.
All right. Terry, I appreciate that. I appreciate the opportunity to be on. I founded the American Policy Center back in 1986, and what we focus on are private property rights issues, on back-to-basics education, and trying to stop the creation of national IDs and stop illegal immigration. We've been involved in all of those issues. Primarily, our focus now has been on property rights, because that is an issue that's affecting everybody in every community across the country. I've been an activist literally since I graduated from high school. It's now been about 47 years that I have been doing this, and I have never seen such rancor, such an invasion, such an attack on our freedoms as we have now. And we're just busy every day. I've traveled across the country talking about these issues. I have my book. You can find it on our website at AmericanPolicy.org, which is entitled Now Tell Me I Was Wrong. The title of that came from the fact that I wrote a lot of articles over the last 15 years warning about all these things, and I was put down as crazy, tinfoil hat, conspiracy theorist. And now I see articles written by mainstream media that look like I wrote them. So that's why I titled it that. But that's what we do. We've been the leader in the last several years on Agenda 21 and trying to sound the alarm on that. So that's our focus today.
Well, educating people is important, but I'm curious what you're finding to be most effective today. What is really working to fight this beast that we're up against, this monster we're up against?
Well, let me say this. I have dubbed myself the Pollyanna of the movement because I see positive things happening, and I know people who just get involved in the issue or have only been involved the last couple of years or so look at it as such a behemoth, and it is. It's monstrous, and it encompasses every aspect of our lives, and people feel hopeless. They feel helpless trying to fight back on it. From my perspective, and we went through about 18 years after Agenda 21 was introduced, trying to sound the alarm, get people to listen to us, and people weren't. And so when I see now where there used to be four of us basically talking about this issue around the country, now I see hundreds of people coming out and leading the charge. To me, that's a huge positive, and I kind of liken it to being on Utah Beach on D-Day, and we're starting to get establish a footing and move inland. This thing is built on a house of lies, and it can come down very quickly when enough people are talking about it. What we're seeing is, the old statement, think globally and act locally, that's exactly what the other side has done. They know full well the way our nation was created, that the local government, the local established, how we're affected from the local level is the most effective on us, and that's the way to make change. And that's what they've done for all these years. They've gone into city councils, county commissioners, and all that, and have been implementing these programs through the state governments. And that's what I see happening now in our pushback in the local communities. People are beginning to go into their city councils or county commissioner meetings, and we're beginning to have an effect. For the very first time, we're beginning to get elected officials to call us and ask, what is this? What do I do? What happens here? I get calls like that every week now. We never got that before. So I'm traveling the country I'm literally using audience participation. I get the entire audience involved and show them new tools that we've created on how to go after this and how to do that. And the number one thing on it is focusing not on Agenda 21 and rushing in and trying in those 3 minutes that you get there to try to explain everything you know about that, because that's when you get shut down. But if you go in and focus on the local issue, what is it you're opposed to in the first place? What's happening there that is going to affect you and you don't want to see happen. And if you begin to focus from there, and you can expand your attacks to other things, but focus on that one thing, you'll begin to get allies, you'll begin to get people to listen to you, and we're starting to have an effect that way.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. That's actually what many of us have done after coming to Continental Congress 2009. We recognized that doing things even on a federation-wide level was just about like beating your head against a wall till you're bloody, and that we're having much more success, getting constitutional sheriffs elected and waking people up on a local level, and especially now that we've had the attack on the Second Amendment and also this Common Core that came out of the UN in our education system has really fired some people up. And it really does seem to be an exponential increase in people awareness at this point. Tom, we've got some great folks, some old friends of yours and perhaps some new friends on with us tonight. We've got Michael Badnarik, of course, who you're quite familiar with. We've also got Kirk McKenzie, who has founded the Defend Rural America. He's got a live mic. Also, Dr. Kate's here. She's producing for us tonight, so I don't think she'll be interjecting too much, but we want to get her in here, too, because she's been doing a great battle with the water situation up in Montana and has really had tremendous success on a local level. We've also got a couple of special guests tonight, Becky Williams, who's running for governor in the state of Texas. She was on with us sometime in the last couple of weeks. So has Margaret Houston, who is Cliven Bundy's sister, who was the lady who the BLM thugs threw to the ground down there at the Bundy Ranch. All of those folks are on with us right now, and we want to kind of have a panel discussion, but you can say hello to any of those that you'd like to, or anybody that's live right now, Kirk, Michael, might want to say hello to Tom. Becky, if you're there, say hello. Margaret, too.
Yeah, hello, everybody. And Michael, it's good to be on with you. It's been a long time.
Hey, Tom. Yes, it's been a while.
We keep saying we have to get together.
How you doing, folks? It's Becky over here in Texas. It's nice to be on the panel tonight.
Excellent.
This is Kirk.
Hello, Kirk. Tom, start us out, if you will. What I want to do is have each of the panel members take 5 to 7 minutes and kind of relate what they're up to, what they're doing, how they're fighting this battle themselves at the moment. And then later in the show, I want to kind of open it up and try to connect the dots between it's like a manifold attack out here. They're coming at us from so many different directions, and I think it's important for our listeners and the people to understand that all of these things lead back to the same people, that we're fighting basically a common enemy in each of these, and that each of these serve to complement each other in bringing down the private property rights. So, Tom, can you kind of start us out, talk maybe a little bit about the UN, and what its overall and reaching goal is, and how they've kind of approached whittling away at the private property rights?
Sure. Going back into the history of it, Agenda 21 came out in 1992 at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. There were more than 1,000 non-governmental organizations involved in the writing of that. It wasn't the first documents they created, but it became the culmination of several meetings and several documents that were done. And what it stands for, Agenda 21 stands for Agenda for the 21st Century. This is their vision of how the world should be organized, how human society should be developed. And they say it flat out that everything has to be in coordination with the environment. The environment becomes the excuse. You hear all these scare tactics, the whole global warming, climate change issue, even though that's been completely discredited by real scientists. Even this week, the White House put out this banshee screaming report about how we're all going to die under global warming. The fact is we haven't had any warming in 17 years, but that doesn't matter to them. Why don't they give it up? Because they have to have that excuse to get us to give up our liberties. The Soviet Union tried to get us to accept the brilliance of Karl Marx all those years, and we didn't do it. When they chucked all that and went into the environmental movement, they suddenly got us to give up our liberties by saying, hey, you might want to have all these liberties, you might want to have all these material things, but if the earth is destroyed, then it doesn't matter. And people started giving up their liberties like a good old-fashioned book burning. You know, this is the excuse that they use, but you know, the Agenda 21 issue covers every aspect of our lives. The logo for it are three connecting circles with what we call the three E's. It's social equity, economic prosperity, and ecological integrity. Well, economic prosperity means public-private partnerships. That's government and companies in partnership with each other, and you know, that's out of the Mussolini fascist playbook. That's where it comes from. When you have that kind of a partnership, you then have businesses that are implementing government policy, and that's exactly what's happening with this. How many companies do you hear talking about sustainability? Well, that's them implementing these programs, and you begin to have fewer choices and higher costs and shortages. Social equity is the whole shebang on this thing. This is the most important part of it. It means social justice. You hear that term all the time. What does it mean? It means redistribution of wealth. And you can redistribute wealth in a lot of ways. You can redistribute wealth by making energy prices high, by higher taxes, by controls on water, by controls on industries and so forth. So government always seems to get the most out of it. And, you know, the whole Obama administration is all about bringing more and more people under control of the government under the handout programs. So that then they call it social justice. And then, of course, ecological integrity is the excuse for the whole thing. So this is how it encompasses every aspect of our lives. And the way this thing came down from the UN down into your local neighborhoods is in this manner. The other side always is saying that Agenda 21 is not a treaty, which it's not. It's what's called a soft law policy, and they say it has no enforcement capability. It's voluntary. Well, that's true. It is, but they're always telling us that there are no blue helmeted troops at City Hall. Again, that's true. They don't need them because they have the shock troops called non-governmental organizations. The people that wrote this document at the UN level then went into the federal government. They got the federal government to create all kinds of grant programs through HUD, through EPA, through HEW, through other agencies. These grant programs are voluntary. You don't have to take one, but they have these strings attached to them that are the implementation of Agenda 21, controls on water use, controls on development, controls on what kind of materials you can use in your building materials. There's an international plan on electricity, an international plan on plumbing, on and on and on like that. So once a community takes that grant, they have taken a drink of the Kool-Aid, and it comes into the community. Well, what they did then, after they put those grant programs together, the same organizations that wrote it in the first place at the UN level, went to the federal level, now they went to the states, and they got the states to put plans together or mandatory to communities that they do comprehensive development plans. Now you had city councilmen, county commissioners saying, what the heck is a comprehensive development plan? Ah, say the NGOs, they come into the community, same guys who wrote it all in the first place, say, ah, we can help you. We've got all these plans. It's in a box right here. You got everything you need. You don't even have to think. And by the way, we've got the money for it too. Boom, 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 boom. That's how it went from the international level into your local neighborhood. And all along the way, they're saying, oh, this isn't Agenda 21. That's just an innocuous 20-year-old document that doesn't mean anything. But step by step by step, that's how they put it in place.
Well, from what I've witnessed, that's just an excuse to see production and the wealth of the people and put it into the pockets of a few. They only really redistribute to those who are supposedly in need enough to buy their votes. I'd like to get Kurt McKenzie in here. Kurt, you've been certainly on the front lines of fighting this battle, just like Tom and some of the others here. I'd like for you to talk a little bit about jurisdiction and how they've been abusing the constitutional jurisdiction and really stepping on the people's rights with that. Kurt, you organize your thoughts better than I ever could, so I'm just going to give you the floor and talk a little bit about, you know, Defend Rural America and, you know, where you're at with that right now.
Well, let me start kind of more at the top. I think Agenda 21 is really just part of a much bigger agenda. It's not the end-all, be-all. This goes much, much deeper than just Agenda 21. What precedes the Earth Summit is the report from Iron Mountain in 1967 and the Unfinished Agenda report in 1977 that directly couples the international bankers as the people who have, since the founding of this country, frankly, have been looking for how to, ways to control the world. And I think what they finally realized is that if they grabbed on the problems that cross government boundaries, then they can go ahead and start to attack the whole idea of the republic, and all they had to do is increase the size of the problem of the boundary. You know, they start with water, they start with the creek, you know, transportation. If you want to control the world and justify world government, then you want something that crosses the globe, like water and air. So they did this homework, and they really figured out that the way that, as they always do, the way to succeed is grab something that people already believe in. You know, rather than trying to create something new, they just grab on what you already believe. They take it over, and then they stuff their agenda inside of it, but keep it looking like what you thought. So they did that, and Agenda 21 is one of the products of that output. My belief is that the I've chosen to fight this battle in rural America. I live in San Francisco Bay, so I live in the heart of the urban area. I'm pretty pragmatic about this. We've lost the coasts. We're not going to get them back, not for a long time, because the bankers, if you look at it, the flow of our capital and the flow of the wealth of this country goes to the ports, which they control, New York City being among the first, Miami, the inland port of Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle. This is where the wealth of the nation aggregates. This is also where, if you take a look at the voting records, you know, it just isn't going to turn around. I mean, California now has the entire legislature, Senate, legislator, governor, all a Democrat, for example. Not just Democrat. I'm Democrat the old way was okay with me. I'm talking about socialists and communists. I mean, people who are dedicated to overthrowing the government as we know it. And so I think that the last stand, really, and where we can get traction is in rural America. I think it's the last stand because you can't get it in urban America. It is a place where you have people who stand up and will fight back. They have the values. They know things are wrong, and they're prepared to do something about it. And the lower population densities, which work against them in terms of representation, work for you in terms of organizing. So for a whole host of reasons, strategic, not just by accident, I chose rural America and been working very diligently to try and stitch together a lot of people and a lot of efforts, people who are pretty much independent, don't want to work together, but kind of force them to understand each other's stories, get them, show them how they can work together, conservative counties, liberal counties, you know, farmers, ranchers, miners, so forth. And because I think that we're going to have to unify more than we have in the past, for sure. And so I do believe that the focus of this is the county. I think that's in rural America where we have to take over. Now, instead of, you know, I agree with Tom's conclusion, instead of, you know, Tea Party people, all of us libertarian people going in trying to convince the audience there's an agenda, I found that to be not particularly fruitful. Instead, I prefer to go in and understand what their problems are. And in the course of learning that, what you realize, if you want to defeat the agenda, you actually have to understand how to defeat the ways it's being implemented. And in rural America, the number one thing you have to understand is neo-environmentalism. The environmental movement has been co-opted and taken over, and is, you know, whether it's Endangered Species Act, it's Equal Access to Justice Act, it's National Environmental Policy Act, it's the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, all these things. So what we need to do, instead of Tea Parties educating farmers, ranchers, and so forth, we need to educate the Tea Party. So I put together a Defend Rural America website, which is a complete A to Z to understand the rural America and begin to understand the battles there. And so we've been successful in redirecting a large part of the liberty movement towards the actual specific problems. Now, the recognition that our environmental movement that we would support, I would support, has been overthrown, we have a lot of work to do to show urban America and other parts that, in fact, these forests aren't being saved. They're being destroyed. There's over 100 million animals that have been incinerated alive. The air quality is degraded. The water quality is degraded. The mudslides in the streams and the rivers. The dams are being blown up. The reservoirs are being blown up. I mean, everything that's happening is exactly the opposite of what we had believed. And so part of it is to expose that and get it back. So what's the next part of that? Well, the problem is the federal government, through the BLM and through the Forest Service and all this, is exercising control over our lands. And this is particularly harsh in the western states, where some 70% of the low land people believe to belong to the federal government. They call them the federal lands. They're not. The reality is, if you go back into the original Constitution and understand this, the lands belong to the people, and in fact, the legislative authority over what we call national parks or national forests, in fact, do not belong to the federal government. They belong to the state governments and to the counties. This is exactly what Bundy is saying, and I agree with them wholeheartedly. So actually getting people to grab on to jurisdiction, in my opinion, is the solution, because the state legislators already have the authority to start turning these problems around. They just don't do it. And so do the counties. Now, the question is, why don't they do it? Part of it is because they don't understand that, because we've been weaned away from true understanding of the Constitution for a long time. But even when they get it, they're not moving the way I would expect. And so now I've unpeeled the next layer of the problem, and that is county property taxes are now don't stay in your county. They go to the state. They're now just another state tax. So the county governments are left prostitutes trying to figure out how to get money. And what they do is the grant writer becomes the most important person. They basically start selling their services to anybody in order to get money for the county. And it's pretty common nowadays for county budgets, 30, 40, 50% or more, to be coming from federal programs with federal dictates. That's how things like Common Core, things stack and pack housing, all these things are happening, because the states and the county representatives are taking the federal money, and when you go in and explain the problems to them, they don't want to risk the flow of the money. And so they don't do the steps that we want them to do, what they need to do. So at the end of the day, my belief is that all of us have a common interest, whether, like I said, Common Core, you want to talk about stack and pack, you want all the things we talk about, is we really have to address the issue of local government no longer belongs to us. And we have to decide, and the representatives have to decide, are they our representatives or are they federal agents? It's as simple as that. And we have to got to take control there, expose these problems, get these counties back, make them constitutional counties, and the same thing with the states. And then we can actually begin to, I think, make some real progress. And I am encouraged, like Tom is, that we're starting to see things happen. The presentation I made up to state legislators in Montana, and including some Idaho people and some people from Colorado and so forth, have swung forward into now a Western coalition of 9 or more Western states beginning to work on common problems to exercise things like jurisdiction, start taking more control at the state and county level. And I think that I'm encouraged to see that happening. But I believe that I would like to see Tom and Michael and everybody else in this movement is focused on this one issue, because it's so fundamental to everything that our representatives are selling their offices, and that is absolutely a huge conflict of interest. It is, you know, they're agents of the people. They are violating their agency. They're violating their oath to office. They're violating the duties. They're violating the Constitution. You know, there's law after law after law that they're breaking. I think we have to establish accountability and take control back there, and then, like I say, I think things can move forward again. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, synopsis of what Defend Rural America is all about.
Well, that's a lot. And as you know, I've been working on with a group organize each county at the grassroots level and form boards of government review, and I think that works in conjunction with what you're saying. Let's get Michael Bednarik in here. Michael, constitutionpreservation.org. You're out there teaching folks about their natural rights as well as what the Constitution is about. What do you think about this attack on private property rights?
Well, I certainly have an understanding of how people feel when they're required to speak after I do, after listening to Tom and Kirk. I mean, it's like, God, what else can I say? I've been studying the Constitution for 30 years, teaching a class on the Constitution for about 15 years. And what I've done is focus on private property. In my class, I tell people that there is a one-word answer for any question on the Constitution, and that word is property. John Adams was the president right after George Washington. He said that the moment the idea is admitted into society that the law of property is not as sacred as the law of God, and that there's not a force of law and public justice to protect it, then anarchy and tyranny commence. So, I mean, I don't know what, you know, your listeners' religious beliefs are, but if the law of property is as sacred as the law of God, I mean, I'm guessing that that's going to be in the equation. And so as we go through the eight-hour class, I tell my students, if you don't know the answer to a question that I ask, raise your hand, smile, and say, property, and you'll be right, and I'll explain why you're right. And invariably, every class comes along, somebody's been, you know, trying to be a wiseacre, and, you know, they do that. And they are usually surprised when I point out that, yes, it is absolutely property. And perhaps the one question that can drive all of this home at a personal level, doesn't have to be county, state, federal, personal level. The question is, who owns your body? Now, at first, people will look at me like I'm clueless. I mean, what do you mean, who owns my body? They all kind of take it for granted. And I point out that we may take it for granted today in 2014, but when we wrote the Declaration of Independence, we said all men are created equal. And that was literally what we meant. Men were equal. Women were not allowed to vote. Women were not allowed to own property. And even more embarrassing to our American history, if your skin happened to be black, we considered you property. And I go through the stages of history where we have taken advantage of people. We actually sold people. And, I mean, people are horrified at the thought of slavery today. But at one point in time, that was, you know, considered acceptable for whatever reason. And I continue to point out that if you own your own body, then you get to decide what food you eat, what liquids you drink, and, you know, whether or not you get medical attention. And then I point out that the 18th Amendment, which made alcohol not only illegal but technically unconstitutional, was completely disregarded by good patriotic Americans. And that's because Congress has no authority to tell you whether or not you're, you know, justified in drinking alcohol. They can't control your body. Now, in Obamacare, they've got an idea of mandatory vaccinations. And, you know, I've long since rejected the idea of the government having any control over my body. And so by starting my students at the very basic premise, something that they know, but they really, you know, kind of take it for granted, they own their body, they own control over what they do with their body, and then we build up from that when we finally get to the comparing communism, which doesn't believe in private property at all, and the Constitution, which has as its primary function to protect private property. Now people are able to see the difference between these different political ideologies, and now suddenly they can look around and they see socialism everywhere. You know, we've pulled the wool off of their eyes, they can see clearly, and they're going, oh, Michael, most of what the government does is unconstitutional. It's like, no kidding. So it generally takes me a little bit longer to arrive at that aha moment where people suddenly have that light bulb go on over their head. But once they get there, they are incapable of being swayed by socialism any further, and they become really staunch supporters of liberty, private property, individual rights, and personal responsibility.
Yep. And you broached the subject that that we talk about a lot here, and I want to make sure that it's clear before this show's over with that all of this is a part of a huge spiritual battle. This is really the whole attack on private property rights is an effort, as Red would say, to upset the pecking order. I'd like to bring Dr. Kate in now, and Dr. Kate, can you give us your thoughts at this point on this attack?
Hi, everyone. Nice to hear you all again, and thank you for such a great conversation already this evening. I am, as you know, in Montana right now, and I came up here temporarily in November 2012 and have been here temporarily since then. But to me, a lot of this starts with the spiritual battle. And I have to go back to Christ's temptation in the wilderness. And what you see there is basically Satan saying to Christ, all of this can be yours, all of the wealth, all of the land, all of the riches, all of the notoriety, everything can be yours if you just follow me. And we all know that Christ refused to take that temptation, but I think many mortals have not. And when I think about 21 and I think about the lust for land and water and resources and control, I think of Satan, and I think of the very much that where we are, each one of us individually, yes, there are individual and local and things, if you will, that we work on, but this is all part of a much larger battle. And hence, if you believe, as I do, that the Constitution was spiritually and divinely inspired, and that common law is God's law, and for those lawyers out there, I know I'm not, you know, getting the right thing and language and so forth, but if you then look at the Constitution as sort of a manifestation of God's law and its emphasis on property and its emphasis on individual rights and its emphasis on God, then all attacks on our Constitution and all attacks on our property have their root in this larger spiritual battle, if you will. The whole Agenda 21, it gets that way as well. Now, the environmentalists, I'd like to bring up a part of a book that Red Beckman wrote. I think it's in Why the Militia, I'm not sure, or maybe it's in Walls in Our Minds, but it's a chapter he wrote called When Lovers Become Haters. And when you talk about the environmental community, and it's and I'm just using this as a very broad term, but anyone who sets the earth and animals above God, anything, any kind of that worship to me is idol worship. So it becomes environmentalism for just environmentalists' sake. Yes, it's been taken over, if you will, but the lovers, so-called lovers of the environment, have become haters of God in the sense of false idol worship. Now, I know that's probably a big start, but I am going to just start there and then drill down to the local level where I am right now, where, frankly, I'm very, quote-unquote, satisfied with working at this level and not a national level, because the manifestations of this struggle are right here. And what we're dealing with is water, and you can't have life or productive land without water. Where I am in western Montana is the headwaters of you know, three oceans, if you will. And the tremendous amount of water here, I always heard about it when I was in my geology and hydrology training, and now I'm actually living here. Water is the target, and also the land here, in many, many ways. Think first of all of the big federal agency, Bonneville Power Administration, and its fingers going out like a web, and all of the hydropower that arises from the mountains here falling down towards the ocean. And the capture of that energy and that water is absolutely the way to control everything, every single thing. So what I see happening is under the guise of essentially an Indian water settlement, and using and abusing Indians once again to basically say, you know, to perpetuate the myth that we Americans took their land, never paid them for it, and stuck them on reservations, and that was that. Absolutely, I'm not discounting the abuse that has happened. But using that myth and essentially guilt, if you will, white guilt, over some very bad chapters, if you will, the claim for water has now grown to a claim for all water. On this particular area that I'm working in, a tribe has claimed all the water in western Montana, not only on the reservation but off the reservation, affecting 360,000 people. At issue here, right on the reservation, is a very strong homesteading community of irrigators who were invited here by the federal government, who have a large federal irrigation project here, who basically have paid for everything, hydropower facilities, ditches and canals, you know, grown the food, supported everybody. Granted, agriculture in Montana is a very, in the West, if you will, is a very small piece of it, but it is vital to the economy here. What we have now is we have these state agencies who are acting, I believe, with federal approval and encouragement, working through a tribal government that is also, and I'm talking about the elite in the tribe, not the tribal people, but a tribal government, a handful of people, very smart lawyers, very smart politicians who see this, use this, if you will, as a way to basically take back all the land that we took, even though there is, you know, considerable law out here. So, this is called a water compact in Montana, and the goal is to really have the tribe have control. Now, you all heard about the Riverton, Wyoming situation where, in fact, the Environmental Protection Agency allowed the tribe, basically gave them treatment as a state status for air, right? The air we breathe, the air and the water, treatment as a state status. So the tribe's jurisdiction extended 50 miles off the reservation. Here, the total amount of water being claimed by this tribe is about 25 million acre feet of water on the reservation, which is everything that exists, and 30 million acre feet off the reservation as far as in-stream flow goes. The peculiarities of where of what this situation is, Federal Reserve rights, means that only on the reservation are water rights allowed for the tribe, if you will, and even there, only for the purpose of fulfilling the purposes of the reservation. It's not all the water. So what you have happening is then by claiming water all over western Montana, all of the water, a total of about 52 million acre feet, and all of the water on the reservation, this is entirely not about water, it's about control. And it will control absolutely the future of Montana. And again, the guise is an Indian water settlement and the using the guilt piece and the history piece to basically give a small group of people, 5,000 tribal members, control over 360,000 people. So in that regard, our struggles have been very much about educating people, and I have to tell you, we could not have had any success here without our Savior, without our Lord. We're not even organized as a nonprofit group. Everybody's working on volunteer. Everybody is, including me. And nobody's making any big bucks out of this, but we feel very satisfied that as we do this work, we are helping uncover the truth here. And that is about all we can do is uncover the truth. And by the time we're done with this, you know, we can't even walk down the street without kicking a rock now and finding something. Now, what is astounding to me and what I think you all like, and I'll try to wrap this up in, you know, another 15 hours or so, but what is astounding is that I was at a meeting last night with the Camas Irrigation District. So that's kind of way out there. It's a very arid area for Montana. And meeting with about 50 irrigators and updating them on where we are with this this water deal. Let me just sidetrack just a second. The water compact did not go through the legislature, did not pass the legislature in 2013. And the more time we've had to expose this compact for what it is, the more the population is turning against it and state legislators. And whether it's out of spite or whether it's out of a tactic or not, the tribes just recently filed a federal lawsuit to try to take everything out of state hands and put it in a federal court. And we call it the tribes lawsuit versus everybody because it's actually going after private property. It's going after the means of production. It's going after all the water. It's going after state institutions and even federal institutions. That doesn't bother me so much, but going after the state institutions is gigantic. So anyway, going back to my meeting with the irrigators, as we were updating everybody on the lawsuit and the compact and various other things we've uncovered here, there's big hydropower stuff involved, and it's all around water rights, and it's all about taking of water rights and control. One of the gentlemen in the audience said, you know, have you heard of this thing called sustainable development? And of course, you know, of course, we have not been able to start at Agenda 21, if you will, because it's too big and it's too easy right now, at least where we are out here, for people to say you're a conspiracy theorist, even though it's not a conspiracy, it's true. But that discussion led into a tremendous amount of truth and knowledge that is exploding here with the people absolutely being aware that this is not just about a tribe, not just about a state government. This is a full-on attack on people, institutions, the means of production, land, and water. And, you know, timber and mining in Montana have gone by the wayside. They've been basically stopped by the environmental community, or as Kirk calls them, the neo-environmentalists. is agriculture going that next way? Remember that Abraham's wealth was measured in cattle, wheat. And when you think about the cattle out here and the wheat, this is, you know, you can't help but see that this becomes a spiritual battle. But what people are beginning to be alert to as well, and it was not my words, it was someone there who said, well, I just wonder if this is about the collateralization of American debt. And sure enough, if you go to a bank and you borrow money and you can't pay it back, what happens? They come and take your stuff. So we've got national parks out here, Indian reservations, national forests, you know, wilderness areas, national monuments, this huge supply of water. And again, sort of as background, my academic training is in geology and hydrology, but I have a formal degree in watershed management. And physically, I see a watershed as a good unit of management of water. And I am very disturbed to see how that has been twisted, basically, and used to usher in this new Agenda 21 and full watershed control. So when I started out talking about Bonneville Power on the Columbia River, that network, like spiders, reaches everywhere into Montana. And if you control the energy and the water, you control the land and you control the people. And so when you see how big this is, you can almost imagine Christ standing on top of the Mission Mountains here being tempted by Satan, because it's a beautiful area and it's rich, and the tremendous wealth of not only the resources but the people here. And what I see happening is exponential growth of information and knowledge and a real strong spiritual base here that knows that it's got to stand up. And to that extent, of course, rural America is where we are left with and why it has to be protected. So all of that by saying, and I hope it's not too much, but we all are part of something much bigger than we know, and that if we remember that and try to get out of our own ways, if you will, I think that we will all know in the end that we've done the best we can. In my view, God is completely in charge. And we don't do anything, that God hasn't already given us and that he could do in a second. But he's watching. Are you going to stand there and let this happen, or are you going to be available to take on, again, what I think is a spiritual battle? And in my view, that is manifested right here in all of the work that we're doing on the local level and with individuals and with a water compact and things like that. So with that, I'll just close. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't have 15 hours, but, you know, each one of us could probably take a whole show and go from there. So I hope that's okay.
Well, and we might just do that, too, because this is that important of a topic. You mentioned the collateralization. I believe that was an important thing, particularly back in the Nixon administration when really the neo-environmentalism really took off, this whole phony counterfeit green movement took off, was because they wanted to increase they were kind of bankrupt, and they needed to shift some things to foreign debt, and wanted to drive the people off of the resource-rich lands so that they could literally use that as collateralization for some of this foreign debt. That's certainly a part of it. That's not all of it, because the spiritual battle goes much bigger than that. Okay, no 7-2 on the board, huh, Kate? I know that I was going to get Becky Williams in right now, but she's having a little bit of phone battery issues. She's trying to quick charge it, and will probably be back on with us here in just a second. Watch for area code 817 for Becky, please.
May I just add one more thing?
Sure.
The issue of these supposedly federal managed lands, you know, the government, our government right now is taking so much wealth out of the land, and people have paid and paid and paid. And there is a kind of this large slush fund that the government has, a reclamation fund, that is now being used to basically turn around and undermine the very basis upon which it was built. And what I'm saying is that to make a long story short, our own money is being used to destroy us.
Well, Red likes to talk about the IRS and the taxes that we pay as a counterfeit tithe to Satan. Everything that we see that is good that our Creator has put in place, just like what's known as God's chosen people, there's always the counterfeit there, like that are Satan's chosen people. And that's really who the enemy is that we're dealing with, is Satan's chosen. Tom DeWeese, you had a little time to think here about all the things that have been said. What are your thoughts at this point?
Wow. Let me just say, what Kirk was saying, I agree. I agree with everybody. But he was talking about the ranchers and what's happening out there, and that Agenda 21 isn't the be all and all end all of it all. It's true. There is a, as I said earlier, they have a it's a much larger agenda afoot here. When they came together at the Earth Summit, they brought all these pieces together. What Agenda 21 is designed to be is the comprehensive plan. That's their words for it, on how to do all of that. They, how do they enforce all these ideas that they've had rattling around for years for control? And that's, pretty much how Agenda 21 came about. And again, using the excuse is, everybody was in favor at the time of environmental protection, and so they use that as the excuse. I was in the first 18 years of fighting this. We were kind of in the wilderness in many ways. One, literally, people in the rural areas were the first targets because of the vast areas of land open there and fewer people. It was easier to move the agenda there, and so they became the first targets. And I was working then with ranchers and people in the timber industry and people in the mining industry who were just pushed up against the wall. I remember a meeting I was attending in Alamogordo, New Mexico, where all the cowboys arrived in their pickup trucks to come to the meeting, and those pickup trucks weren't full of hay. They were full of records. They were full of documents. These guys knew part and parcel every single thing that they were up against, and they had been pushed against the wall as far as they could be pushed, and now they were pushing back. And that's what we did for the first 18 years in this fight of trying to make any kind of headway at all. But I will tell you this. Yes, the rural areas where we need and certainly have the best opportunity to push back, but what I'm seeing now are fights in the cities, which did not exist before, in the populated areas, and these people are now becoming as educated as those farmers and those ranchers were several years ago. They are understanding what is up against them. And just some of the victories that we've begun to have in Ohio, my home state, in northern Ohio, in the Cleveland area, Lordstown up there, Geauga County, and also now in Summit County, which is around Akron. The group of activists there have achieved getting their county governments to reject membership into regional plans, into committees. Regional government is the way this thing moves, gets us, as Michael can tell you, gets us farther away from the local government, untouchable. And these people are understanding that, and they're fighting back with it. Here in Virginia, we've had the Martha Bonetta bill just passed after a two-year fight. The property rights movement in Virginia is astounding what they have accomplished and how organized they are, even though last year they lost and lost and lost on a slew of bills that were all Agenda 21 related or sustainable development related. They came back this year. They actually got the Bonetta bill, which was designed to protect small farmers from county government regulations. It's a major property rights bill. Even got a new commie governor that we have here in Virginia to sign the bill, which shows you how much pressure they put on, and it got that done. Of course, Alabama was the first state to pass an anti-Agenda 21 bill. Oklahoma just got one passed through the House and in through the Senate committee. It kind of stalled in the Senate when the other side began to understand this was a pure property rights bill, and they rose up and to work to stop it. I advise the people there, don't worry about it. Next year, come back with a stronger bill and make it their worst nightmare. Pretty soon, they're going to want to compromise with you if you begin to build the support for it. Meanwhile, on smart meters, people in cities are rising up in mass against these things. Naperville, Illinois, people have been arrested standing up against it. California actually succeeded in getting some major legislation passed that at least gives people a chance to opt out. And I was really surprised when I heard that I thought that the strongest argument against the smart meters and winning against them was the health issue. And I asked the lady in California who led this effort. She said, no, we went after it on the property rights issue and freedom of choice. And that's how they won. I was really surprised by it. I still am surprised by it. In Florida, there's a major effort going on right now there against smart meters. Also, Florida passed legislation a couple of years ago to stop the mandatory acceptance of comprehensive development plans. First time in the country that happened. So, you know, these are things that are beginning to happen across the country of people rising up in cities, in populated areas, and winning victories. And I was on a national conference call with leaders on Common Core, and as we discussed it, I said to them, this is a much easier issue to combat. And I think because we already laid the groundwork on a very difficult issue like Agenda 21, then now they're organized, and I think it's an easier fight because it's so much easier to see than something as complicated as Agenda 21. So, those are things that are happening with that. One of the things that we're teaching people who are trying to come up with resolutions, legislation, and so forth, is you cannot put a bill together through state legislature or even in your county and say, we're going to ban Agenda 21 and we're going to protect property rights. This is what the problem is with the Alabama bill. That's what it says. You can't define, you have to define your terms. If you don't define your terms, then you can't, because, first of all, the other side never uses the term Agenda 21, so they just say, oh, this is just local. So, that's not that thing. And the other thing is that people have forgotten what property rights are. We have been so invaded that it used to be 40, 50 years ago, you could stand on the edge of your property and say, cross that line and suffer the consequences. Today, you'd be arrested for violence for even thinking that. So you have to define your terms. And I found a definition that is out of a Washington State Supreme Court decision from, I think it's 1997, that was a Fifth Amendment issue. And I think it is the best definition of property rights that I have heard. The quote is this. This is the definition. Property in a thing consists not merely in its ownership and possession, but in the unrestricted right of use, enjoyment, and disposal. Anything which destroys any of the elements of property to that extent destroys the property itself. The substantial value of property lies in its use. If the right of use be denied, the value of the property is annihilated and ownership is rendered a barren right. I think that is the most perfect definition. Maybe some of you guys got a better one, but I think that's the most perfect one I've heard, because it really focuses on the use. You know, you say, oh, this is my property. What is your right today in many cases on your property? You got a right to pay the taxes, and you got a right to pay the mortgage. Beyond that, every decision is made by somebody else. And this one specifically says if that's what happens, then the value of the property is annihilated and it's rendered as a barren use or barren right, and it means nothing. And so this is what I'm encouraging people to use. Unfortunately, in Oklahoma, I met with people there. I gave them this definition. And unfortunately, what they did was only use the first sentence. Property in a thing consists not merely in its ownership and possession, but in the unrestricted right of use, enjoyment, and disposal. That's all it said in there. The opposition grabbed hold of the words unrestricted use, and they went berserk on it, and they started recruiting local communities, governments, to oppose the bill, because they said this takes away our right to do what you've elected us to do, to control, have zoning and that sort of thing. And because this bill, if it's enacted this way, then you're going to have a pig farm next door to you. You're going to have all kinds of restrictions, a Walmart in your neighborhood, blah 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 blah. And so they go off half-cocked like that and make all these same arguments. Those are exactly verbatim the same arguments they made against the Bonetta bill in Virginia. And so now I'm advising people that you instead of focusing on that, don't let them get away with talking about you're going to have a pig farm next door to you. We're talking about. When we're talking about usurpation of private property, we're talking about cases where the case of a lady in Utah where she was arrested for having her grass grow too high. There was another lady who planted an organic garden in her yard after the city council and county and mayor said she could, but the development Nazi comes around and says you can't do that. She was arrested. This is the kind of dire, crazy things, overstepping of government that is affecting people on the local level, and this is what we mean by protecting private property and being allowed to use it as we see fit. Since the dawn of civilization, there have been nuisance laws, ways to handle things. If somebody put a pig farm next to you and it was smelling you out of it, if somebody put a bright spotlight in their yard that you can't sleep at night because it's shining in your window, if somebody is playing loud music, there are ways to take care of that without some one-size-fits-all dictator put down on your ability to use your own land. So these are the ways, I think, that incrementally that we can begin to fight back. Obviously, there's a whole big agenda behind why they're doing that, no question about it. But if you're trying to recruit people on the local level and find a way to get past their rhetoric and take the high ground, these are the ways that we're slowly starting to learn to do it.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm going to get Kirk in here next. I'm going to give Michael a heads up, though, on a question I want to ask. When Kirk's finished in a few minutes, Michael, I'd like – you ran for president in 2004 in the Libertarian Party. I want to ask you, if you were president today, take a few minutes after Kirk's finished and tell us what you would do today as president to turn this around. You might even play the Bill Whittle game of Mr. Virtual President. So, Kirk, I've got some questions for you, but I want to just give you a few minutes to get your thoughts out at this point, and then I'll ask you a couple of questions.
Well, I think the first off, let me say I think one thing I'd like to see is that I think that the movement has been pretty much fractured and pretty much a lot of independent groups. I do see some convergence. We're not all on the same thing at the moment, but I think we're all on the same side of the chessboard, if you will. And so whether your people are going for what Tom's talking about, or they're going for statehood, or they're going for land, transfer, or they're going for jurisdiction, or wherever they're going, we're narrowing the field down, and I think that there's going to be even an increasing amount of convergence here. And I think when we get to that point and we start to actually converge in a way that we can, within a county, bring all of our resources to bear, all the people that are involved in forestry, education, you know, chemtrails, whatever, onto local government, I think we're going to really begin to make some big hay. The big picture for me, ultimately, is the Senate. I think that the Senate is the thing that we can control. The rural states plus the southern states, Alabama is quoted there, South Carolina, of course. You know, those guys were on states' rights way back in the Civil War days. Those states plus the rural states essentially is about two-thirds. And you kick in a few New England states, we got three-fourths. I think that's what I keep my big mind on, and I think that there is a lot easier ability for us to go ahead and organize and be effective in those places. We're just not going to change California. We're not going to change New York. We're not going to change Florida. You know, we're just not. You know, we'll have our battles here and there. You know, San Francisco, you know, Tom, as you know, there's teams up here fighting stack and pack, but the reality is the stack and pack's already been built. I don't care what you do. It's not going to be taken out. That stack and pack's not for the displacement of rural America. It's for more immigration. And, you know, they're brought in. They're given an agenda. They're told to hate Americans. They're told that all this stuff belongs to them, and we're racist if we don't give it to them. And if you start looking at the voting statistics, you know, we're becoming a very bipolar nation. So, for me, anyway, I'm encouraged that things, the education is getting out. I'm encouraged that there's going to be some consolidation as I think the leaders of these various areas start working together more. You know, I have agreements with other people that, you know, maybe they have some other thing, but they're trying to carry jurisdiction along in their story and start adding it in. I'm going to start doing the same thing with theirs. And so I think that there's a way for us to, each of us can continue to have, you know, the main thing that we believe in the most, but we could also be synergistic with the rest and begin to create a more unified front. And I think that that would be very desirable, and I think that's actually going to happen. The Constitution I want to talk about just very briefly, there's this movement to go ahead and pull together a convention to do this. I'm adamantly against that. We are just, frankly, not organized enough. We're not strong enough. We don't have the money. We will absolutely be outmaneuvered, and we'll find that whether, you know, whatever basis is called, it's going to turn into a con-con, and we're going to end up having a new Constitution, and I think we're going to lose big time. I would rather see the following occur, which is to put together those thoughts of what we want to see. I mean, first off, to me, all we got to do is get to enforce the Constitution we have. And I think that would go a great strides, and I think that we can focus on there, and that's where I focus. If to the extent we feel that there's an amendment that's needed, you know, let's get that amendment in front of state legislators. You know, let's have the states start passing these amendments. I don't want to go through Congress. We can go ahead and get states to take independent action. They did that when they overthrew the Articles of Confederation. They ignored all the amendment clause and threw it aside. So I think if the states begin to take some initiative here and really get their arms around really what the problems are, one is enforce the Constitution we have, and two is if you need an amendment, let's start putting those together informally at the states and so forth. And I do believe that there is going to become, and it's already developing, is there going to be a coalition of rural America. Rural states are going to come together and actually begin to act like almost a separate nation in some regards. They're going to start to realize there's common cause between them and common solutions, and I think that we are seeing that beginning to happen.
Well, believe it or not, you answered the questions I was going to ask you.
Oh. Okay. Good.
Well, if there's any
part of this I would like the audience to do for me, if you want to go with, if you haven't already, you know, I put up two recent YouTube videos. One's called Jurisdiction Can Save Rural America, and the other one's called The Unconstitutional United States. Those two presentations right now are kind of the front leading edge of what I'm working on, and I'd sure like to have people watch those. They're on YouTube.
Well, I was going to give Tom and Mike the opportunity to mention their websites and stuff. Do you want to go ahead and tell people exactly what the websites are that they go to?
Sure.
Mine is defendruralamerica.com.
Okay. Do you still do the Silent No More publications? Or?
No. You know, I started that when I really anticipated being a publisher. I had, you know, 20 different books I wanted to write, and I came to realize that after writing my first book on the monetary system, most people don't read, and the statistics are less than 3% of people read books now. And if you watch people, they really have an attention span. It's less than 3 minutes. It's just really unfortunate. So I really began to move in the direction of more video and audio, more visual type of stuff, which I think...
I'm glad you did, but your book on money was excellent, and it is still a relevant topic today. And I personally believe it's an important part of seeking any kind of redress is correcting the monetary problems that we have, because this is a major way that our private property is being stolen. It's what facilitated everything else that the enemy is doing.
Absolutely.
So it is still key. And so I recommend people to look at the money, at the book Money that Kurt McKenzie did. And it was an excellent book, Kurt. Well, thank you. I'll be back to you here shortly. Michael, Mr. Virtual President. Did I intimidate him and he left? Michael, you might be muted. Did Michael drop, Kate? Dropped his phone line. Dropped. Well, Michael, if you can still hear us on the stream or whatever, call back in because we'd like to hear what you've got to say about that. 817, Becky Williams. I believe you're back on live with us. Becky, have you got a live mic?
I do have a live mic.
Well, tell our folks again, like as though you'd never been here before, who Becky Williams is and what you're up to, and then tell us about the great nation of Texas and how you're fighting all of this attack on private property rights down there. I know I get a report, Becky, from my buddy down in Austin, which Michael is certainly familiar with, but my buddy down there gives me a weather report all the time from Austin. He refers to Austin as the Agenda 21 city because they've obviously bought it hook, line, and sinker down there. But just like today, he said the weather report was they were supposed to get a couple of inches of rain, and instead they get less than a hundredth of an inch of rain because they striped the skies and hit it with a harp, and they are drying up the reservoirs down there. So tell us what's going on in Texas, Becky.
My name is Becky Williams, and I'm running as a write-in for governor for the state of Texas. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we have had quite a bit of a drought. The lakes are all down 12 to 17 feet. We actually did get a bit of a storm after I spoke to you earlier. We just had one come through here with some pretty heavy rain and 65-mile-an-hour wind. But when it looked like it was really going to dump one on us, it just went on past us, so that was short-lived. Unfortunately, we have a real serious situation down here with the BLM on the Red River, and we're addressing that. In fact, on the 24th, I'll be meeting with some folks in on the border for a meeting, talking to them about what we're going to do to address the Henderson situation, who is a landowner in Texas that owns 90,000 acres that the BLM is trying to seize. Now, these folks, it's been in the family for over 100 years, and they've paid taxes on this land for over 100 years, and the BLM is trying to say that that is federal land and that they have every right to come in and take that property away from this gentleman. Now, about 35 years ago, they stepped in and took 140 acres from his father, and that moved the Texas border south 1 mile. Effectively, we've got 141 miles of border that they want to move along the Red River. And these guys are bullies. We're also addressing an issue here in my hometown of Arlington, Texas, with the ACLEI. And I don't know if you guys covered any of that when I got bumped off earlier, but that is one of the UN bullies that works very closely with the BLM and the EPA and the other groups that are out there federally trying to come in and control water rights and utilities and reconstructing environmental programs for, like you said, federal funding, for lack of a better terminology. We've been hoarded out for money across this nation, and the municipalities are given the choice to allow them to come in and implement their program. And to be honest, it is a group that not only works on the environment, but as one of the gentlemen spoke about earlier, also Common Core. It's the psyches, dumbing down the kids and getting them to come on board. You have to understand, we're the Hope School, and Common Core was implemented in 1950, so it's becoming an issue with folks that are sitting in city council seats that have already been brainwashed to be a part of the Minion for this UN takeover, or New World Order, whatever you want to call it. The UN's fingers are so deep into everything down here, it's not even funny. Now, when we meet on the border on the 24th concerning the Red River, we're going to be discussing how we will address a Bundy situation, if you will, and do it in a legal and nonviolent manner, and hopefully avoid the confrontation that Miss Margaret and the Bundys and the protesters experienced whenever they showed up to Clive and Bundy's property.
Well, I have to tell you, Becky, I am more concerned about what is lawful than what is legal. Legal impresses me less and less, and should not really enter into. A man should not have to enter into a jurisdiction where he falls under things that are legal but illegal but lawful. If it's lawful, it should be okay for a man to do. And there is a difference there, and maybe we'll do a whole show on that topic alone. Becky, you've been listening to these guys. Do you have any questions for them?
I did a little bit of homework while I was bumped off the call. I wanted to see if the ICLEI was doing dirty work with the BLM, and I found it to be true. I was actually going to ask the first speaker. I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name.
Tom DeWeese with the American Policy Center.
Yes, Tom DeWeese. I was going to ask him if he knew if they were in coalition with one another, but I actually did do some research and found out that, yes, they in fact are. And it's true. They come into the states, and that's where they get their foothold. And we don't have all cities in the DFW area have not given over to the ICLEI. And some of the things that they're doing, which actually brought it to my attention, is the averaging of your utilities as opposed to charging you for actual usage. There's so many ways that they're making money on the backside of taking advantage of the American people. It's ridiculous. We gave $3 billion plus dollars out of the state of Texas back into the IRS last year, and we got less than $2 billion back. So what it tells me is that they're coming in, they give us a little bit on federal funding, we pay much more in than we're receiving back, and then they're making money off of the land seizures and auctioning of the land, you know, much like the same thing that they're doing to propose the super highway and the super railway. It's paid out of the taxpayers' money, and then it's 100% profit for the government, and they're bringing in outside sources to build these roads and these railways. They're all foreign companies that have come in from outside of the U.S. that are getting these contracts. And I'm going to do a little bit more homework tonight, but I would just bet you I can track them back to UN, some of them.
Well, actually, a lot of that is the Crown. Like Builder Perry, I think he's an agent for the Crown. Tom, you want to address this issue of public-private partnerships is one of the tools they use, and they call it that like it's such a good thing, and in truth, it's serving foreign interest. Tom, would you like to jump in that a little bit?
Yeah, let me first say about ICLEI. We went after ICLEI. We made them a target because it was easy to make the connection between ICLEI and the United Nations. They helped write Agenda 21 in the first place, and they made it their mission to work globally to go into local communities all over the world and get local cities to pay them dues, and they brought in all the tools you needed to implement this. And so we made that a target, and it was easy because of that connection. But there's a great misconception by a lot of people that if ICLEI is not in your town, you don't have to worry about it, these policies. That is absolutely not true. As I said before, there are thousands of these organizations, but the number one group bigger than ICLEI is the American Planning Association. They are literally in every city in this country, every community. Almost every community in this country uses their handbook, their manual on how to put things in place, and they are absolutely identical right down the line with the policies that ICLEI is implementing as well. So just because ICLEI is not there doesn't mean you don't have to worry about Agenda 21. They are there. And if it's not American Planning Association, it could be a plethora of any other number of groups. My little town of Warrenton, Virginia, I mean here now, has at least 17 of these organizations that dictate what goes on here. So public-private partnerships, that's what the Trans-Texas Corridor was supposed to be, as a public-private partnership. There were no competitive bids even for that. The Spanish company that was chosen to do that was just chosen. It was not. There was no competitive bids for it. There were no American companies given a chance to bid for that. It, of course, is going to take about 500,000 acres of private land away from ranchers and other folks. If there were going to be no entrance ramps or exit ramps on it, so towns that lived off of local people coming down the highway, to stay in hotels, to use restaurants, to get filling stations, that was all going to be in the center, and the Spanish company was going to make the money from all that. If you had a property where your house was on one side of the corridor and your barn was on the other side, you might have to drive 50 miles to go around to get to your barn. Police, fire, school buses, nothing could get through from one side of the county to the other. This is what this was up against, and this was government, raw power of government, and Rick Perry was the main force behind that to put all that in place. So these public-private partnerships, what it really disturbs me is that there are a lot of libertarian groups who advocate public-private partnerships as a free enterprise answer to government situations, and that this helps cut the cost of government and has free enterprise making money and so forth. And you might get that for school lunches and that sort of thing if there's a competitive bid for it, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about organizations, companies that get non-compete clauses. They get all kinds of goodies from the government. There's now a program called benefit corporations that are being implemented in legislature after legislature across the country. And benefit corporations essentially mean corporations that agree to implement sustainable development policies get to go to the front of the line automatically for all the goodies, for tax breaks, for ideal land where they want to build their businesses, whatever other goodies that they can pick up. And their competition doesn't get that. That is not free enterprise. I don't care how you put it together. And any pro-freedom libertarian organization that is promoting these are not promoting free enterprise. And how they can do that is beyond me to understand. But this is one of the major tools, and it's one of the three circles, one of the three E's of Agenda 21. And when you're helping put that in place, you're helping put that whole policy in place.
Tell us, I'm sorry, go ahead. I cut somebody off. Who was speaking? Was that you, Becky?
No. I'm good. I'm having to charge my phone in the car. We had a yeehaw come flying down the road and take one of our power poles out. So I'm winging it on my cell phone with the torch in the car. I apologize.
Okay. I just didn't want to cut you off. Sorry about that. Tom, tell our listeners, Kirk, I'm going to get you in here in just a second. Tom, tell our listeners how they can help support American Policy Center.
Well, again, our website is AmericanPolicy.org, and we have all kinds of tools that we've been creating. It's funny, Terry, because a couple of 3 years ago, everything up to that point we had created on talking about Agenda 21 were all designed as, listen to me, let me tell you what this is, listen. And then finally one day I got some notes from folks saying, okay, I get it, what do I do about it? And I said, gee, I don't know, we never got that far before. And so we have focused the last 3 years or so on really putting plans together on and ideas and new tools how to fight back. And I'm learning every day, and I'm learning from very creative folks around the country as they practice on things. So, you know, on our website, we've got an archive of articles that talk about all these things. We've got tools we've created. We've got the granddaddy of them all was our Stop Agenda 21 action kit. It's got four manuals. It's got two DVD sets. It's got everything you want to know about this thing and probably a lot you don't want to know. We've got the Cliff Notes version, which is a little $6 booklet that tells an overview of what it is, and then some of the new policies of what we're doing to fight back. There are videos there you can see. American Policy Center gets no grants from any major corporations, even though the Greens keep coming out and saying that I'm secretly funded by Exxon and the Koch brothers. I've never gotten a single dime from either of them, so it's just not true. We exist on individual contributions from with an average contribution of $15 to $20. That's how we operate. But we got the programs on our website, and you can also donate there if you choose.
Can I ask a question, please?
Certainly.
Do you have a suggestion, Tom, on how we can remove the ICOEI out of the community once it's been brought in? How do we remove them?
Well, let me tell you, in the last 2 years, we have succeeded in getting at least 150 cities to do just that. And the way that's been done is people have come together and organized and laid such a noise down on it that communities, local city councils and county commissioners have moved to do that. It's pressure in doing that and making a lot of noise for it. And interestingly enough, just last fall, ICLEI had its annual international meeting in Bonn, where its headquarters are, and they were literally holding their heads in their hands saying, we can't get any more American cities to join. And that's because we made it political poison. We really focused on ICLEI, and even communities that thought ICLEI was a great idea would begin to diminish their membership with them, or end their membership, and sometimes saying, well, we got all we needed out of them anyway, so it's okay now. But the fact is that we've had that many cities leave. They were supposed to have 1,000 members by now, and they don't. They've got 550 in the United States. So that's how you have to do it. You have to do your research, and we've got lots of research on our website about ICLEI, and know what you're talking about with them, know what it is they do, and begin to meet with individual commissioners or city councilmen, whatever you're working on, and begin to put the pressure on. They've got to know that it's political poison. They are spending your tax dollars to fund these guys. Maine actually had a bill. No, I'm sorry. New Hampshire had a bill that did not get passed. But what it said was it was an anti-ICLEI bill that no money of state money could be, or even local money could be spent as dues for this organization or anyone like it. And we need to get more regulations or more legislation like that enacted across the country. So I think Alabama's bill does say that. So, we are beginning to knock them out one at a time like that.
Tom, I've seen some ballot issues raised. I've seen some bills. What's your recommendation for the best way to go about that for somebody if they wanted to organize a group, in their local town or municipality or county? What's your best suggestion to go after a ballot issue? Go after the legislators, public opinion. What's the best way to attack?
Well, I think it really depends on the community and what is popular there and what works. How you can go about it. The one of the things that we've created, if you find it on our website, is a resolution to protect citizens' property rights. And I'm teaching people to use this. And as I say in some of my talks, when we talk about Agenda 21, everything we're talking about tonight, I mean, this is a massive issue, obviously. And you tell people all that, as Kirk said, you get them to understand what it is they're facing, and then they know better how to fight it, on individual issues. But that's the IMAX version. That's where you can see the pores in their face, and it's scary. And people say, how can my little contribution do anything about this? And what I tell them is, you've got to bring the focus down. And I believe that if you focus on property rights, that is one of the major things. If you can't, if you have protection of private property rights, you can't implement sustainable development. It's just a fact, because sustainable development is first and foremost anti-property rights. So what we teach them to do is, when you get those 3 minutes to talk in front of your county commissioners, don't stand there and say, you're implementing UN Agenda 21 and you've got all these other things. I mean, you got 3 minutes, and they have NGOs standing behind them saying, the guy's nuts, don't pay attention to him. But if you walk up there and you say, gentlemen, as you're bringing these plans and these planners into our community, I've just got one question for you. What guarantees do I have that you'll protect my property rights? And I guarantee you, all those county commissioners are going to say, oh, of course we will. Hey, I'm a property owner too. And you just smile at them and say, I'm really happy to hear you say that, but gentlemen, I'd like to have it in writing, please. And that's where the resolution comes in. All this resolution says is, if they're going to do something, have meetings to talk about something that's going to affect your property, they bring you into the discussion. If they move ahead and do something that affects your property, that they're going to pay you for it, and also that they are not allowed to have planners just walking all over your property make their plans without your written permission. That's what this says. When you ask the question, what guarantees do I have you'll protect my property rights, you have now asked the number one question that every property owner in the county wants an answer to. Now, when you present them with this resolution, and this is not a document, I mean a legal document, it is a poll. You're polling them on their morality, on where they stand on property rights, and I guarantee you, absolutely guarantee you, they'll refuse to sign it. First of all, because all those NGOs standing behind them in the shadows won't let them, or telling them you can't do that, because they know that the whole jig is up if you do that. So when they refuse to sign it, you ask the most radical question in the English language: why? And let them talk. But you cannot do this alone, because they'll dismiss you and throw you out the door and forget about you. When they say they won't sign it, you need to have 10 and 15 other people stand up and say, why? And from that point, you begin to build a campaign. That's the whole purpose of it, a campaign that the next time have people show up with signs that have these guys' photos on it saying, why won't you protect my property rights? Take a petition door-to-door. Did you know that your local officials won't protect your property rights? Make an issue out of it and begin to lay the groundwork to run a campaign to run these guys out of office, because the only reason that those NGO groups have any power whatsoever is because your elected officials give it to them. They're 501c3 private organizations. They have no legal power to do anything unless those elected officials give it to them, so we need to replace them with elected officials who won't, and they'll dry up and blow away. At least that's the plan.
I find it very interesting that any organization that is tied to the UN or the Islamic movement all have the same status.
Well, I have a 501c3 status too, and a C4 as well.
I understand that, but it's very odd that they're granted this status in the U.S. Across the board without question.
Well, it depends. If ICLEI has an ICLEI USA, and so they say, well, this is an American organization. And that's how they get around it. It's not a UN organization, couldn't come in on its own and get that, but they establish a U.S. chapter, and then they can get it.
Okay, I understand.
Yep.
Tom, we've got a caller that's on the line, and I thought I'd let a couple of calls come in, and then I'm going to have Kurt take a few minutes to close out his comments. I want Red to get in here for about 5 minutes, and then I'm going to give you, Tom, the last 5 minutes to give your closing comments and give our listeners what you'd like for them to take away from tonight's show.
All right.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
We have, I believe, Clarice in Montana. Clarice?
Well, I'm listening in, and I'm trying to digest it all, and I'm surprised to be I didn't realize that I was going to be called on, but it is certainly quite a it's become a real problem here in Montana, as Dr. Kate said. We're facing this water situation, but I really am very much encouraged to hear that there is an organization, or there's that Elaine Willman, who is used to be in this area in Oregon, has a group put together now that it will be having a conference coming up. I'm running around here trying to get the meeting notice. It will be addressing how the Indian nations are being used by the federal government to take over private property rights and water and so forth. And you may want to include in your schedule of events a very important one coming up. It will be June 14th and 15th and held in Riverton, Wyoming, that Dr. Kate mentioned. The organization that is putting this together, and Elaine Williams is the representative that I've been talking to, but apparently there's 19 people that are in this group. It's the Citizens Equal Rights Alliance, and it's national. She said there was 12 states represented on the board, and if you want to read her book, it is a book that she wrote some years ago, but prophesized how the federal government will be using this form of government of the tribal government to lay claim to all the water of the United States, and through that will be able to gain control of the land. And It's Going to Pieces is the name of it. I'm sorry, I was surprised that I was going to be called upon, but I don't have that book in my hand. But Elaine Willman is the one that you should be contacting concerning the background of this whole thing. Her phone number is 509-949-8055. And she is pretty much coordinating this meeting that's coming up in Riverton, Wyoming. And on the agenda will be how the EPA and all of these federal agencies are working together on this project. So that's about
Elaine,
all I can say. I beg your pardon?
Elaine Willman? You said it's Elaine Willman?
Elaine Willman, W-I-L-L-M-A-N. And the meeting will be held in Riverton, Wyoming on June 14th and 15th, and it's being put on by the Citizen Equal Rights Alliance, which is an organization, a national organization of 19 members from about 12 states. And the book that she has written, and I'm not sure how many years, about 5 years ago probably, but she prophesied, she and another friend traveled to 14 reservations throughout the United States and documented what was happening in each of these reservations. And her prediction was that they were going to be, through this, the land within the reservations being held in trust by the federal government and the reserved water rights, which they are agreed to, it's agreed legally through, through treaty to provide each of these reservations with water. And in our particular situation, as Dr. Kate said, they have overextended the bounds of the reservation into the 11 counties of western Montana, laying claim to all of the water in western Montana. So the overreach, it's embarrassing.
Jan just posted Elaine's name and the name of the book and everything in our chat, and I appreciate your comments. I do need to get to a couple of folks here real quick, but thank you very much for calling and listening. We appreciate it. Kurt, you got about 5 minutes here to give your closing comments.
Well, I can do a lot less time than that. Basically, look, the heart of the beast here, the thing we got to figure out is, does the federal government have the authority that it has? And the clear-cut answer, if you read the Constitution, is no. It's usurped this authority, and it's usurped it through a history of corrupt Supreme Court decisions, and it's also done it because we just simply don't understand the real Constitution. And I think that that's really fundamental. We have to challenge this federal government's authority to be doing everything that is, and that's the jurisdiction argument. And I agree with Tom. It's, we've got to fight for our lands and our land ownership. We've got to keep those under the people, and we have to have control over the use of those lands ourselves. Anybody who's out there, you know, fighting these kind of environmental issues in rural America, just go to the Defend Rural America website. You can use it as a free resource, both to educate yourself, as well as if you have people that you want to educate on these issues, just send them on over. Other than that, my message is start to organize your county. I agree with Tom. You have to take you have to pull together a core group. You've got to get them really educated on the issues. You have to write specific resolutions that really put the teeth to it. You know, you have to, now you force them to say yes or no. You put them in front of them. And when they don't do it, people start getting madder and madder and madder. The steam builds, and more people get involved. And, you know, we took on frogs and toads here, listing here in California, because of its huge impact on 14 counties. And that we mobilized 40,000 different comments that were made. Typically, our site only makes a couple dozen comments. We got 40,000, and when the federal government went ahead with it anyway, and some of our county boards didn't do anything about it, despite every plea that we made for them to engage, it really begins to hit the people, I think, goes from the brain to the gut, where they understand, really, we have a problem. And really begin to get very serious on locating on just specifically these issues. We've got to get back local government or we're going to suffer global governance.
Kirk, your comments are always pointed and concise, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be here tonight and contribute to this panel discussion. And don't be a stranger. We'll get you back on here. Appreciate it a lot. Red, you've been awfully quiet. You got about 5 minutes before we turn the floor back over to Tom.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We hear you.
I am unmuted then. 5 minutes, that won't even get me a start. but I would like to make a suggestion, and that is that every single organization that are in this battle to protect our property rights and such, every single one of them, there needs to be a common truth that is taught at the lowest level, and I mean it has to be really developed into a sound belief system in everybody's repertoire of beliefs and politics. And that is the fact that one person with truth on a jury has more power than 11 people that have swallowed the hook, line, and sinker of modern media, Common Core, the education system, and all of that. That one person that understands the power of one individual with smarts about the Constitution, the intelligence, the truth about the Constitution and what it's all about. One person can have more power than those 11 people that are basically mentally disabled because of the lies and the propaganda which they have believed. I of course, agree with Dr. Kate that we are in a spiritual situation. It's a spiritual war that's there, and a lot of people aren't aware of it, but it's there. And we're coming down to a very critical time in world history. Our American history, of course, is right there. We've gone from the most powerful, richest nation, most productive nation in a matter of 50 years. We've gone from the top level, the strongest nation on the face of the earth in all of history, and we've gone down to where we're little more than a banana plantation down in Central America someplace. And we've made some terrible mistakes, and we've got to correct them, and there's only one way to correct them, and that is to find the truth and then defend the truth and propagate the truth every chance we have. And that's what is done tonight here on this program. And so I'll turn it back to you, Terry.
Well, we've left you about 9 minutes, Tom, so you're welcome to take it all if you've got that much to say.
Well, let's just see what happens here. I'll tell you what, I find it very interesting. You all know how the other side always calls us crazy conspiracy theorists and dismiss us, and that we are just nuts and don't have anything to really add to anything. However, it has become extremely obvious that they are scared to death of us. And I say that because in the last month, there have been 3 major attacks. It's obviously a coordinated effort. It started about a month ago with the American Planning Association putting out yet another attack against us. This was a scholarly report to try to explain how we think and what we're all about, and come up with a tactic. The tactic up till now has been throw us out, ignore us, get rid of us. And now they're figuring out we're not going away. So how can we get our meetings, get through our meetings? Well, we need to kind of embrace them and listen to them a little bit. And so that report came out about a month ago. That was followed the next week by a major attack by the Southern Poverty Law Center, usual. It's called Agenda 21, the UN Sustainability and Right-Wing Conspiracy Theory. And I'm proud to say that it's a 23-page report, and I'm cited 23 times. Apparently, all roads lead to me, according to this report. And then that was followed the next week by another attack by the Natural Resources Defense Council, and it was picked up by treehugger.com. And that was called Agenda 21 Conspiracy Theorists Threaten Cities' Sustainability Efforts. It is obvious that they are terrified of what we're accomplishing. And recently they also did another report trying to figure out how we made this a national movement. And the only thing they could come up with is that I get secret funding from Exxon and the Koch brothers. And the bottom line of this report was extremely revealing when it said, I forget the name of the or the number of the proposition in California that was backed by the oil companies and so forth a year or so ago, but they stopped it by saying this is all funded by the oil companies. The bottom line of this report on how we're making Agenda 21 a national issue, it said in the report, the way to stop these guys is to do exactly what we did in that proposition in California, is paint them all as funded by big oil. and said, flat out said it. So, you know, they're desperate, and they're looking for anything they can to stop it. They actually use the term, we're punching above our weight level, you know, using a boxing term. And I took that as a great compliment, you know, because we are a tiny little ragtag band of citizens across the nation. They just can't believe there's a true grassroots movement, and there is. And we need to be heartened by this. We need to be energized by this, and we need to redouble our efforts in fighting this thing because, as I said earlier, this is a house of cards, a house of lies, and it doesn't really take, even though they're entrenched, they're wealthy, they've got all kinds of political power, but it doesn't, once something begins to erode at that and the lies are exposed, it can fall very quickly. And that's what I'm pushing towards. And in fact, what I have intended to do in the next week or so in response to all these coordinated attacks, I've had it with them. I'm tired of being called a conspiracy theorist. I'm tired of being told to wear a tinfoil hat and I'm a nut. And so I am going to issue a debate challenge to all of them, to the American Planning Association, to the Southern Poverty Law Center, to treehugger.com, and the guy who keeps writing this stuff about me. And I'm going to issue a debate challenge to them and say, come on, show me you're a man. Show me you got guts. Show me you're right, and I'm just a nut. Shouldn't be hard for you to come in and debate me on this, because what I've been doing over the last several years is collecting documents that have show the direct ties to their policies, to these UN policies, where they at one time used to say, oh, this is a comprehensive blueprint. This is something we've got to do. This is a great thing, to suddenly, this is an innocuous 20-year-old document. It doesn't mean anything, and we have no ties to that whatsoever. American Planning Association put together their myths and facts document to just make us all look so silly. Fine, bring it all, because I've got these documents, your documents, and I challenge you to explain them to people and how this has nothing to do with all this. And again, the whole purpose of how I'm attacking this, how I'm going after that, is to discredit them and to show people and give activists who are getting cut up in meetings because they're going in full bore, full attack mode, and they're getting cut up because they don't really understand what they're up against, and showing them new ways to slice and dice and discredit them and to make our side much more powerful. And I know it's hard to see, but I see it. It's happening. It's starting to happen. And the mere crazy panic of these reports that they're putting out and how silly they are is showing that. The Bundy situation really brought it to the forefront. And now people are really beginning to see what the consequences of this is. And so step by step by step like that, I'm encouraged. I really think that we have the opportunity to make this happen.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the SPLC. You know, I said earlier that all of these various attacks lead back to the same place, and all roads don't lead back to Tom DeWeese, but they do lead back to Rome, that's for sure. And, you know, you mentioned Spain being involved in these public-private partnerships. Well, a part of that cabal over there is Juan Carlos, and he's one of the folks near the head of the snake. And you look at the SPLC and the ADL, they were started by the same people that started the UN. They've infiltrated all of our three-letter organizations, the CFR, the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, and people that are successfully speaking out, like Schaefer Cox did, for example, and they will trump up charges and put them in prison or try to take their kids away from them or literally take them out like they did Breitbart if they had to. So we've got to organize at the grassroots level. We've got to come after them, you know, not just one at a time, but in groups of people. And we've got to learn to exercise our rights as people. We are truly a sovereign people, and we are above the Constitution. We are above their statutes, as long as we're not injuring another man or stealing his property rights or creating theft. We have a right to speak out and to stand together that's what we've got to do. Tom, I just want to thank you for joining us tonight. I'll extend a thank you to Michael and Kurt. Kurt, you were great tonight. Becky Williams, if you're still on, really appreciate you coming on tonight. I don't know what happened to Margaret Houston, but if you're listening, Margaret, you're welcome to come on Walls in Our Minds anytime, and certainly we'll give you time here. I just think this is a terribly important show. And it's great to have such good and wise and people who have got the courage to speak out in the way that you have tonight. And this is a great team of people, and I'm just blessed to have this network. Red, thank you for your comments. Kate, really appreciated your comments earlier, bringing out the spiritual battle, because that's what we're in. And Tom, Kurt had a supporter who asked for a copy of the property rights decision that you mentioned earlier. And I was wondering, is that a digital copy that you can send me that I can forward on, or do you have Kurt's email?
Oh, you mean the definition that I used?
Somebody else asked for your definitions. It was, matter of fact, it was one of our people in chat up in Montana that asked for those definitions.
Yeah, that's all in the booklet that we have, Agenda 21 and How to Stop It. Find it on the website. It's on there.
Okay, so that's something they need. Yeah. There's a small fee for that one, isn't there?
That's $6. Yeah.
Yeah, that's peanuts. So,
yeah.
Kurt, are you still on? Is that what you were asking about? He's probably gone. Well, our time is up. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we'll see you next week for Walls in Our Minds.
America, God shed his grace on me. and crown thy good with brotherhood. From sea to shining sea, from sea to shining sea.